We are back. I am Paula Gordon. Bill Russell and I are talking with E.O. Wilson, and we're talking about the most fundamental challenges that we have. This is how one species could wipe out virtually everything, at least for the next 10 million years. When you use the word reckless, you're not just scolding us individually. You're really talking about who we get to be in the short and long term, aren't you? Reckless is a powerful concept. Then you had some other names that I...
The important point is to get a sense of history that goes far beyond just traditional history, back through time and forward into the future. And by back in time, I mean beyond the usual 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 years of recorded history that we think of almost in ordinary terms as exclusively human history. But beyond the 10,000, to 20,000, to 100,000, to 500,000 years in that long haul of evolutionary time during which the human species originated as a species, and we acquired our basic qualities of human nature that we successfully threw in our struggle against the rest of the world to acquire the power to control and multiply our own kind. And then into the future, looking beyond just a few decades of the measures needed for local economic prosperity to the long term in which humanity is in equilibrium with the Earth's environment in a manner that would provide a genuine security and a high quality of life for everyone on Earth. We just don't talk about those subjects in realistic terms. They don't seem to come up very much in the media or in the pronouncements of the public intellectuals.
It was a Greek sophist, I think, that first was quoted as saying that man is the measure of all things. Mm-hmm. And the work you have done with ants goes a long way to me to putting our role in the world, in the universe, into perspective. I didn't know how many there were. I didn't know how well adapted they were. I didn't know all the wonderful things they do.
And you didn't know that ants are the measure of all things.
this is postmodern sophistry, I guess. But tell us a little bit about ants. Because to most of us, they're just those little nuisances that show up
picnic
now and again.
Well, you can make a good example using ants of how ignorant we are of the world around us. And I'll just give you a few facts and figures with ants alone to make the point. I've made a rough back-of-the-envelope estimate that there are somewhere alive at any given time about a million billion ants. And since each ant weighs very roughly about 1/1,000,000th as much as a human being, it turns out that ants weigh on the Earth's surface roughly the same as what human beings weigh. But when you think about ants...
I hadn't thought about that.
I'm glad to know that I'm producing information that is going to prove useful in people's lives.
It's a fair fight. Let's see, there's as many of them as there are of us.
Let me continue and see if I can work this into something. The point is that ants are among the most abundant organisms on Earth. That's what we've learned about them. But they are also just part of what I like to call the little things that run the Earth. You know, the foundation of the ecosystems that keep us alive. And now you have to add the ants, a whole array of little creatures that most people think of as creepy crawlies, and among
the
plants as the weeds and so on. And we have in most of our urban and suburban lives, at least, come to look on all these little creatures as essentially disposable or at best nuisances. But if they were taken away, if they just, for example, just the insects were taken away from us, I think you would find that the terrestrial ecosystems of the world would collapse within a year, and life could not be sustained for humanity. Why? Because these creepy crawlies and the little weeds and other wild plants all around us that they live in and on are what cycle and recycle all of the nutrient and material compounds that we depend on to live on. They create the air, literally. They create the soil that we stand on, and they do it for free. And the point is that the more we remove them, the more precarious our own existence becomes. And increasingly, and this is already a trend well advanced, we're becoming a prosthetic species. That is, you know how a prosthesis is when you get a leg replaced that you've lost, and you've got to do it mechanically, or you have a pacer on your heart, that's a prosthetic device that keeps your heart beating and so on. Well, in terms of maintaining the world world environment, the very foundation of food and air and water on which we depend, we're becoming increasingly prosthetic. Most people realize now that our hand is, so to speak, on the rheostat of the climate, that we somehow have to start adjusting the amount of carbon emissions and other greenhouse gases that we produce, and that we are actually now pretty much in control of the Earth's environment, and that we're running this planet increasingly like a real spaceship. And this may not be a very wise thing to do, because the more and more that we depend on scientific and knowledge and advanced technology to keep everything in balance, keep our lives going, the more dangerous it becomes. Whereas for millions of years, this has been done by these natural ecosystems for us free. And that's the lesson of the ants.
Well, and do we know enough to do it?
I don't believe we do at the present time, no. I think that most people are unaware of just how much they depend upon these natural ecosystems around the world, and how chancy everything becomes as we replace them with our own habitations and with our agricultural fields and other major modifications of the Earth's surface.
There's another piece of this, you know, what comes to seems to me to be hubris. I sort of have the sense that we know a lot about the world, a great deal about the world. In fact, there's very little left to discover. We've mapped most of the world. We have satellites that take pictures of it in a very high resolution. We have scientists that have been scurrying hither and yon for several years, several decades, centuries, that basically we know who lives here and what they do. And from what I gather, that's not necessarily the case.
No, we know next to nothing. In broad geographic exploration of the surface of the planet, at least the land, we have the rough features worked out. Even so, there are still spots on Earth that have never had a human footfall. Footfall of a person from industrialized, developed countries. When I was a young guy working in the field in New Guinea, I had the thrill of being the first person of European descent, the first white man, as they used to call it, to climb the center of the Sarawakit Range in the Huon Peninsula of New Guinea. To climb that with native helpers and to stand on that crest, the first person to do it. That's exciting. There are not many experiences open to us like that. But the rest of the world is in many respects unexplored. And that's particularly the case of life on Earth. At the present time, scientists know about 1.7 million different kinds of plants and animals and microorganisms, but generally agree that the number is probably at least approaching 10 million out there, and could be as high as 100 million, especially when you throw in bacteria and other microorganisms. So there's a living planet waiting to be explored. And the way I like to put it is, if you understand that exploration can occur with as much excitement in many respects as climbing a mountain range, once you're informed and once you have the skill and power to do it in the microscopic world, then there are whole worlds to be explored without walking beyond a few hundred feet from your habitation. I like to speak, for example, of spending a lifetime in a Magellanic voyage around the trunk of a single tree. So there's an awful lot in this planet to be explored. We know less about the surface of this planet than we do the surfaces of all of the other planets in the solar system.
We have a great deal more exploring to do with Edward O. Wilson, who is a 2-time Pulitzer Prize-winning scientist, a biologist. Bill Russell and I are delighted to be with him, and we will all be back in just a moment.